You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. And for this episode, I have Francis McKee from Scotland. And Francis is somebody who I followed her music with the Vaselines and other groups, and also become particularly interested in finding out her yoga practice and that she's been engaged with for many years. Francis McKee, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
happy to have you. Start off the questions with, were you an artist when you were born?
I'm a twin, so I don't know if that has anything to do with being an artist. And also from a big family, five children, so I think we used to have a piano in our house, and I was always tinkering on that piano, and I loved to draw and sew and things. Obviously not when I was a baby, but you know, even as quite a young person, my parents didn't pick up on these things, and one day I came home and the piano was gone. And I said to my parents, well, what happened to the piano? Oh, nobody used it. Just rubbish, gathering dust, you know. So I think I was, actually, but I don't think I was given the opportunity.
Yeah.
Especially when I was younger.
Yeah, as I explore this question with guests, it's really risen to like a significant area of inquiry, like, you know, expectations. You know, I talk to artists where the expectations of their father or grandfather or painters before them, and they have those expectations, and versus others who are either cultivated, not cultivated, start later. I find it very fascinating of, you know, what happens when you're younger. Mm-hmm. Sorry about the piano.
No.
Gosh, it's big. It's big.
It didn't stop me. My twin sister got invited to the recorder group at school, and she didn't want to do it. And I said, well, can I do it instead? And so I learned the recorder at school.
Yeah, wonderful. So another question is talking to you as the beginning, as you know, were you an artist, is just to keep it right within art to begin with, and just like art and creativity. I wanted to ask you your opinion of what art is. So what is art? What is creativity in art?
I think art can be anything you want it to be. And creativity is unique. So if you put those things together, then something unique can be art and created from anything.
I wanted to talk about yoga and connection to creativity, or that kind of expanse. I can speak for myself personally. I was introduced to yoga, and it's changed how I physically inhabit the world. Mm-hmm. It's changed my ability to express. It's helped me control my emotions. And a lot of those things, it's been a great area to go in. And I've always been deeply fascinated with folks who are creative like yourself, and because there tends to be some intense elements to the personality. So you've been, yoga isn't new for you. You've been practicing, and you do it more primarily now, as I understand it. Can you talk about yoga in the connection to creativity and opening up in that
absolutely.
Realm?
So I think I started practicing yoga when I was about 23, and I was a school teacher at the time. And I remember the first class that I went to, I just thought, this is the best I have felt ever. And I started going to my teacher. I went with my sisters, and one by one, they dropped away, but I kept going. And then I decided one day that I'd had enough of being a school teacher. And I remember turning up into my yoga teacher's class one Thursday at lunchtime, and she said, oh, what are you doing here? I said, I've left my job. And she said, welcome to our world. And it was brilliant, because I had felt quite, oh no, what am I going to do? And I didn't think, I thought everyone had a sort of regular 9-to-5 job, and I felt quite bereft, but also really, I never wanted to teach your school children. I knew from the first day of college that I'd made a mistake. But that mistake continued for the 4 years of the education degree and then another 7 years teaching. So it was a massive step just to say, enough. But and then I trained as a yoga teacher, and I've trained with it's the Iyengar system. So we don't have like a set sequence. That this is where the creativity comes from for me, because in Iyengar yoga, it's like learning an alphabet, and then, which are this, you know, the poses individually, and then you can learn to write a song or poetry or a book, you know, by putting all these different sequences together. So quite often, and I've been teaching now for over 20 years, and it still excites me that I'm, you know, I'll have a week and I think, right, I want to, this is my forward bends week. How do I make it interesting for me as a teacher? How do I make it interesting for the people who are paying me to teach them? And how do I say, if I want to teach a particular, maybe a more advanced pose, what are the building blocks that I need to get there, you know, so that people feel that they're effortlessly moving into something? And for me, that is really creative. But on the other side of that, you know, yoga has given me something that I didn't think I would expect to get, because when I was with the Vaselines when I was younger, I was really shy and I had terrible stage fright and things. So that's got not completely gone, but it's certainly, I have an inner confidence that I think you get from yoga, because you're, like you said, you're more content in your own skin. You feel relaxed in your own body, and you just have this kind of, this is who I am. And I think that's what's the gift of yoga, actually. It's not whether you can be, you know, really flexible or anything like that. In fact, I was joking with my class yesterday, because I said, you know, I always get phone calls from people saying, oh, I can't do yoga because I'm too stiff. And I was saying yesterday, you know, with yoga, no one phones me up and says, I want to be stable, because actually yoga should bring you stability, strength, a little bit of flexibility, but it's the stability, and it's just, you know, the fluctuations of the mind, but also the stability within your own self. It's really important. And that has helped me, the practice of yoga, because I was never much for practicing guitar, but the practice of yoga enabled, when I was young, before I had kids, I had a really quite strict practice regime. I would get up, I would practice yoga, and then I would practice guitar for a couple of hours. I still practice yoga. I don't practice guitar quite as often, to my horror and shame. But, you know, so it gives you that discipline, doesn't it? And I think, you know, Iyengar, BKS Iyengar, he saw a really strong link between music and yoga. He was brought over to the West by Yehudi Menuhin, the violinist. So, you know, the violinist said, I have learned to play my instrument not by practicing the violin, but by practicing yoga, which is incredible, isn't it?
It's beautiful that mm-hmm. space is created. I want to delve in into that dynamic in particular, because there's a theme that's arisen in the podcast, and it's like maybe just like this argument or historically about, you know, creativity and where it comes from. So I think of like the standard, you know, like think of like Dostoevsky, Russian literature, the sufferer, right? The, you know, the pained and the expression, almost the expression of all this stuff. And then I've been heavily influenced by, you know, maybe like as you describe it, or yoga or contemplative practices where something moves out from a place of more harmony. And the David Lynch, director, artist, really changed my interrupted my thinking on the suffering, because he said, you know, the place through transcendental meditation, and you drop your net and you capture the fishes and the mm-hmm. images that show up, and you can get some big ones way down low as you do, you know, connect to this. These two ways of thinking about art are just so opposite. I wonder if you had any thoughts on what that dynamic, like that artists struggle with, of the suffering, of the healing and expression.
I think I did say to a friend once, if you're happy, you don't really write a good song. You know, so I think, you know, the best songs are, you know, they're not happy songs, really.
Right.
They're not. They're
right.
about, you know, pain, suffering, whatever. So I think, you know, as in the human condition, we've all got that somewhere. There's always an aspect that's been, you know, either transformational from some sort of place of suffering. And I think it depends what you do with it. I think it'd be a very, very, I was going to say, lucky person who never had any disruption in their life. Or it could just simply be someone who's not connected. I don't know. I think you can wallow in that, or you can make it a creative tool. But I don't think you need to have had come from the depths to write, you know, a good book or whatever. But you have to. I think you have to go deep, whatever process you're going through. It's the sort of nature or nurture kind of argument as well. And you know, I think I'm glad my parents, they weren't musical in the sense that they could play a really good musical instrument, because I think the pressure that they would impose on, you know, you to do something like that would be too much. So I think we are a product of our childhood. You know, we grew up, or I grew up in the 70s, and it was harsh. Actually, I was a teenager in the 80s. It was not an easy time. However, and I was just saying this the other day, if it wasn't for unemployment benefit and social security, you know, a lot of artists that are my age now would never have started, because you got help actually from the government to do nothing. You know, I was a student, but over the holidays,
right.
I got paid, you know, I got my rent paid and things like that. So I had a part-time job, but always had a part-time job and still studied, but still had a little bit of extra time for rehearsals and money to pay for rehearsals actually as well. That's, I think now is just, it's not there.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I talk, you know, artists and in particular, you know, different fields, you know, talking about the pandemic and mm-hmm. whether their art corresponds to it, whether their art can be translated through it, the role of art within it, right? You know, I've talked a lot about those questions over time. Mm-hmm. On that point too, we talked about what art is and like how it can come out, but what is the role of art in your opinion? This come up a lot during social upheaval, things that have happened, but what do you believe the role of art is?
Well, I think no one likes to hear a song that's preachy. I think that's the first thing, you know? But I think, for example, music and any form of art, writing, has always pointed a finger at establishment, and that's not been allowed to happen at the moment, because music is, drama, art, music, not so much art, I don't know, but in the sense that all the art galleries are closed, so art has been suppressed and stifled, and I wonder about that, because, you know, musicians are really struggling at the moment, not just musicians, but people who work on the road. You know, will this ever come back? I really, really don't know. But I think, you know, it's very divided. You know, there are musicians that are sort of, you know, really glad that all these restrictions are taking place and point the finger at people who are breaking the rules, allegedly. And it's all become very, very divisive. And, you know, my feeling is this should be a time where musicians, artists, writers should be questioning. No one's asking any questions. Everyone's accepting. And for me, you know, that's not a revolution. And I think music and art and drama and writing and all this, the arts has been suppressed. And, you know, maybe something will come out of this, maybe a cultural revolution, not like China, but, you know, but I do feel that there's a lot of censorship and suppression at the moment, and I feel quite uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, it's... You know that, and I appreciate those comments. Like on what the role of it is. You know, I work in the labor movement here, and you know, I have this kind of joke where, like, I love all types of music, but I'm a big metal fan, right? And I like the aggression that's in metal. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm like a metal labor guy, and there's a great folk tradition within labor, but it seems like sedentary to me. And I know when I'm going into, like, you know, whether it's conflict or labor-based conflicts, like, let's get revved up, let's go. And it's interesting as far as like the different representations to be able to express. What I wanted to ask you, because I'm really interested in this, Francis, is about, you know, I represent teachers as well. And you're talking about your early part as, like, you know, really 11 years as mm-hmm. something you indicated that you knew wasn't quite right. And then, you know, talking about a trajectory of a career, but this the whole development of the Vaselines and you learning guitar and playing. Starting with the teaching in the 11 years, what for you, did you want to try to get to the goal to be able to teach and never felt that it was right? Because that's such a long time. Like, what was going on for you to kind of get where you needed to be from that point?
I think it all goes back to when I was about 11 and, you know, I had quite a dysfunctional background, and at 11 I said to myself, the only person that can look after you is you. So I, you know, worked hard at school, and that was my exit, you know, to do it through, you know, a kind of degree. And I'd really wanted actually to study drama, but that sort of working class sort of who do you think you are kind of thing was really strong. And, you know, so if I sit in, I was in a drama group from the age of 14, you know, it wasn't as if it was just like, oh, whim, I think I'm going to be a drama person. You know, I had looked into it for 7 years or whatever, but I just eventually just didn't have the confidence to even apply for it. So I got an interview for teacher training, and I didn't want it, so I was very relaxed at the interview. And they said that they would let me know in a few months if I got in a place. And they phoned me the next day and said that I had a place, which was the worst thing, because then I thought, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to apply for drama. I can, you know, I don't have to face that demon kind of thing. And I just wanted, I think also at the back of my mind was, well, I can always, I'll get a decent job with a decent wage when I become a teacher. Haha. But I wouldn't, not necessarily if I followed what my heart was saying, you know. So I kind of just, and, you know, that was when I was with the band. So, you know, that came way before I was at college or anything. So when I left school, I was unemployed for a year. So I just felt, actually, I need to do something concrete. And I got, you know, so far with the course, and it was fine, and I could teach really well. But, and it was not ever about the children and, you know, the sort of the job. But it did feel a little bit like an institution. I felt like a prisoner or a prison warden, because, you know, in teaching in, you know, some difficult places in Glasgow, it wasn't the kids' fault. There was a lot of deprivation, and what I had learned to teach at college was so far removed from the actual reality of what these children needed. Yeah. And I found that, you know, that was the good part of it. I could go in every day and have a little bit of hope for these kids. But what I couldn't tolerate was the expectation of middle-class teachers wanting homework done from these children whose background was dysfunctional. And I understood that because, you know, to an extent that was what my family background was like. So it was middle class attitudes imposed on working class kids, you know, that had no economic structure in their family at all. And it just, it got to me eventually. And for me to do the job that I really wanted to do, I would need to be, you know, in school way longer than I was paid for. So I just, the system is corrupt. The whole idea of education, and you know, I went on to home educate my own kids because I couldn't bear to put them through that system that had, you know, everyone boxed in by the age of seven. So yeah, it was a system that really sort of wore me down more than anything.
Yeah, and thank you for that. It's definitely a dynamic that I see a lot, you know, the K-12 system, given how much things have changed. And I see here with testing, I just had a conversation with an artist who's a teacher, and we had a deep conversation about, you know, testing, value, the language of children, the development of children. And she's deep down and saying, these kids have a lot, and mm-hmm. they have it very young, and we're missing the primary link. We're missing the fundamental piece, like express yourself. And mm-hmm. so
exactly. And I think this, everything, I mean, I watched these lovely kids come in at 5 years old. Yeah. I mean, they just could soak up anything. And by the end of that first week, they were all bored out their skulls.
Oh, God.
Not in my class, but, you know, that was it, you know, with my own children. I mean, they went on to secondary school, but I had two boys, first of all, and I just let them play with Lego, and we were outside all the time. And that's what children need. They need freedom. They don't need to be boxed in, sitting at a desk. And now, of course, all these kids are labelled with ADHD and this, that, and the other. And it's, you know, it's because we're trying to fit square pegs into round holes. And I think schools really need to change the way that they, that, you know, what they offer children. And I think actually quite a lot of times schools label children as not stupid, but you can't say that anymore, but, you know, underachievers. And they're not. They're just not being given the right kind of education that they need.
Yeah, I once heard this quote, it was basically from a kid as a standard quote. It was, my teacher told me I was smart, so I was. My teacher told me I was a good artist, so I was. Like the influence of the person who's right next to you, and we forget about that a lot.
It's adults. A self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? You know, I was told at school I couldn't sing. I wasn't allowed to be an angel at the nativity play. I was told, no, you can't sing. And that kind of stayed with me until I was in my drama group and we were auditioning for a musical. And the girl, the woman playing the piano, she was like, oh, you've got a really good voice. And I was like, really? You know, but it took quite a lot of guts for me to audition because I had this embedded, I can't sing.
It really sticks with you. Mm-hmm. And I know my own development as far as whether it's drawing, painting, trying to represent something in the world or something inside me. I got the negative or the weird stuff around the age that you mentioned, 14 mm-hmm. and 15, and it was 30 years later that I picked up the equipment again. So on that very point, you know, the creation of the realm or the ability, and negatively spoken too, this is what you are going to be.
Exactly. You'll be nothing. You know, that's said a lot. And also think, you know, a lot of people get sick when they're older because they've not tapped into their potential. They've not realized the possibilities. And I think this takes it back to yoga. Yoga opens up so many ideas of possibilities. Like if you become confident within your body, and I don't mean that you've got to be able to, I think, you know, we've really commercialized yoga to a point where it's actually putting people off. You know, everyone's sort of 20 and super bendy and that's not yoga. That is really not yoga.
Yeah,
but it's transformational. So for me, you know, the most amazing thing is to see someone come in who, you know, postural needs just some help to see them transform into this, not cocky, horrible person, but someone who, I mean, one of my students said, I finally like my body. And this is a 55-year-old woman. And I think that's an amazing thing to say, isn't it? That's the power of yoga.
Oh, it's beautiful.
You know, exactly. And when we're younger, you know, it's, you know, we're, oh, I'd hate to be 20 again. You know, because you're not, I hate saying this as well, but you don't know who you are. And as you get older, you let go of all those layers and layers. And yoga is really great at uncovering that. And then you can just be yourself, which some people might like, some people might not. I don't care anymore. I like me. That's the most important thing.
That's the foundation. And everybody, we're talking with Frances McKee. And thank you so much, Frances, for joining. I have a few more questions. Actually, I wanted to mention one little anecdote. So I went to a Vaseline show.
I saw that you're Doug.
Yeah, I kept my I guess electronic records are permanent now, but I
that's always our favorite place to play. It's always
Doug Fir Lounge. So everybody, listeners, I'm gonna allow you, Frances, the Doug Fir Lounge in Portland is my favorite music venue. Very intimate. You know, feels like you're in Twin Peaks or maybe
it's brilliant.
A small little roadhouse in Twin Peaks, and that show was special to me. I never seen you play. Number one, number two, the sound, everything. Three, you make me laugh all the friggin' time, and I enjoy that. So thank you for that. And the final piece was, you know, I got the V for Vaseline's shirt at the end of the show, and I'm buying it not at the end of the show, it was before the end. Had to leave a little bit before because I had a babysitter.
Oh,
my kid was a little bit younger, and so I wanted to get back. And of course, the vendor says, "Oh my gosh, Frances she's probably gonna stop by right after." And I'm like, "Oh, I know she might, but I gotta go." So I didn't get a chance to chat with you then. But that was a fantastic show. Maybe about 5 years.
Was that
years
when
ago.
Duchess and Duke were supporting us?
When who was?
Was that when the Duchess and Duke were supporting us?
I'm not sure. I don't remember that exactly.
I can't remember. We played there twice, and once we played in this other place down. It was a big hall, and it was awful. It was just awful.
Yeah.
But didn't have the same atmosphere or anything.
Yeah, it's super, super intimate. I've seen some great shows there. About the music and your relationship to it. So, and we're talking about the teaching and there's so much more we could talk about in expanding out what happens with kids and things like that. But then you start to move into music, and then, you know, people know you through that, and Nirvana covers your songs, and then all that happens. What did that mean to you? Like, you know, like all of a sudden, all
nothing.
That happened.
It meant nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I kind of, the Vaseline's split up just as I started to teach. So I was involved in, you know, a whole different world. I wasn't involved with music at all, except, you know, I got really into electronic music and was going to raves. So guitar music meant nothing. Eugene phoned me up and said, "Look, there's this American band that wants us to support them in Edinburgh." And I was like, no confidence, like, well, we haven't, I said, I haven't even got a guitar anymore. We had this like 20-minute rehearsal in my flat and then went off to Edinburgh, and, you know, Norman was there. It was like a circus of people there, and I was like, oh shit, I don't know how to play anything. So I did the only thing I could do, which was to get absolutely totally drunk. I was just like, I can't do this.
Push me out there. Let's go.
And, you know, I had no idea that this band, especially Kurt, was so enamored by us. I had no clue. In fact, because all I had done for the past wee while was just try and forget about the Vaselines, because it was just so embarrassing. And, you know, you know, Kurt was around, but he's quite shy. I was just sort of in fear of my life going on this stage without knowing what I was doing, thinking, what an idiot, you know, so all that sort of stuff that goes through your mind, and just not being rehearsed, just not knowing what we were going to do. But that was, we were always like that. That's why we always got really drunk before we went on. It was a total shambles all the time. So I, you know, people have asked me so many times about that night, and the only thing I can remember is at the end of the night, everyone was really drunk, and you know, that's when the, you know, the sort of inhibitions came down, and everyone was chatting, and it was great. But don't ask me about the gig. Don't ask me about even watching Nirvana.
So Francis, I mean, it was rock and roll, right? So at the end of the day, it's rock and roll. I wanted you, if you could just take a little bit more of an opportunity to talk about yoga practice and connection to the studio, and just mention kind of like how I'm thinking in the sense of like through the pandemic and how yoga happens. And I know there's this kind of online and physicality. I was just wondering if you could mention, as far as your practice, what's going on for you in your creative endeavor there.
Well, thank God I practice yoga. That's all I can say. And I used to joke with my students and say, you know, I could go to prison. It wouldn't bother me, because if I had a space to practice yoga, you know, that's it. Yeah, because you could take your journey inward. So actually, yep. I have my own studio. And everyone in the building had gone, but there's three units, and the people upstairs had moved out. So I was going to the studio because we had to sort of be really adaptable, and went straight into online, and I didn't have space at home to do that. So I would go into the studio on my own. It was quite creepy, actually. And coming home at night, the streets were deserted, that kind of thing. I don't like teaching online. I don't think it's the way that yoga should be taught. But for that time, it was, you know, my students were saying how grateful they were and that I was doing it. But as a teacher, it's really exhausting. And, you know, it's the fact we all thought it was going to be quite short term. And here we are, you know, Scotland's been quite strict. We only actually, I decided to move to bigger premises. And so the upstairs where the people had moved out, I thought, this time last year, I took over that lease instead and thought this would be great. This, you know, offer people a bit more ventilation, more space and all the rest of it. I got the permissions to sort of change it into a yoga studio last October. And it's only been 4 weeks ago that I could get students into the building. And actually, there are so many students not coming in. They're just prefer to do it online. So in order for us to pay the bills, we have to do this, what we call this blended approach, where we have people in the room, people online. And it's actually, it's quite exhausting. So I'm taking you another, I took some days off last week. I'm going on a little break tomorrow. And just to recharge my batteries, actually.
Yeah, good. Yeah. You know, it's one of the things I did notice as far as the extraction with the online stuff. You know, I think a lot of humans, like, whether as they were trying to perform on there. I mean, I talked to people doing online comedy, you know, like I've talked to people, you know, who are sopranos, you know, doing tryouts, like stuff. I mean, you have to do it that way, but you can't imagine exactly how you can instantiate the presence of a soprano or the, you know, the yoga pose, right?
No, as far as I really don't think so. And I think now what's happened is that, which is good and not good, you know, so the community that you have of your students is now getting superseded by the international community, because you can just go on to anything and do anything with any teacher now. And don't get me wrong, I've travelled far and wide to be taught yoga. You know, in 2019, I go to Pune in India every couple of years, and I was there in December 2019. Supposed to be going this year again, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I've been to Colorado, you know, to be taught. You know, so You know, it's lovely to be taught, you know, with these international teachers, but now what's happened is, I think that, you know, I was joking with my students, and it was like, you know, you're here online, but what are you actually getting from me? You could go, you're paying me, but you could go online to Adrian and pay with your soul. It's free. Oh. But, you know, I think we're, it's all about illusion now, isn't it? So I think a student who came in yesterday to the studio, she said, oh God, it's so different being in the studio to being at home.
Yeah.
It's so different. And you can't, there's no words for it actually. But it's that connection, it's that human connection that's totally missing now. Having yeah. said that, my teacher's in London and she runs an online class, but she teaches in a very, very specific way, and she watches everyone like a hawk, and you get instructions and corrections from her. And that's more than I would get if she was teaching. I would go down to London, you know, every few months, but I'm getting that weekly class, which for me is it's a bliss, actually. It really is.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point about, you know, the community and how it's created, right? Because as you start to aggregate online, you'd be like, well, the yoga studio is down the street, and it kind of brings up questions of community, like in the sense yeah. of, like, you know, what who the group is in yoga, the energy. We know that the energy in the room and mm-hmm. all those things tend to carry a lot. I want to, you mentioned some of the aspects of yoga where it seems like more of a corporate, you know, that there's a little bit more of an infusion of trying to sell it as a product. And I think within that, I started, like when you mentioned, I was thinking about some of the difficulties in describing what yoga is. I mean, if we're talking about energy, right, all of a sudden you and I can talk about that and we can get into that. But, you know, you bring up energy walking around the street, people are like, oh, invisible energy, and you're sending me my energy, and we're doing this. It's tough to get a handle on. And since that what yoga is, do you think there's a better kind of like way to be able to connect around that?
I don't know. I think there's a certain vitality. I can tell people that practice yoga. You know, we did a in Sub Pop's 20th anniversary, and I was watching Mudhoney.
Oh yeah.
And I was watching Mark Arm, and afterwards I said, "Do you practice yoga?" And he said, "Oh yeah, I do." You can just tell yeah. there's a vitality there. And, you know, my practice comes first. You know, I teach yoga just to feed my yoga habit. I don't really,
yeah.
You know, I get quite surprised with people who teach but never have time to practice. I'm thinking, well, you've got that the wrong way around. So I think, if someone meets me or whatever, then maybe some of my yoga enthusiasm, whether it's my vibration or the way I hold myself or just my vitality, makes them think, oh, I wonder what that is. And then maybe yeah. ask about it. You know, I don't, if I was walking around, you know, my shoulders down and, yeah. you know, I always just say to people, if you love running or if you love hill walking, practice yoga, because that will help you run and hill walk for much longer. So it's almost yeah. like a bit of body insurance, and then you don't bother saying, and then you feel, you know, your vibrational change. You don't go there. You just go. Yeah, you'll just have the energy to do the things that you really love.
Yeah, that's a quite the invitation. I at the beginning of the pandemic, I started walking deliberately each day, and I've averaged, I think, 8 kilometers a day from, so I basically doubled or tripled like my walking. But it's really I never really connected in the way that you said around like the yoga to the walking and mm-hmm. what that does. Like I know I was doing two somewhat connected wonderful things to do just for myself in a pandemic or any time, but I've received like those benefits and effects, mm-hmm. and it's just notice and be gentle with it, as you know, not sell it as the next product, you know, like
exactly,
the end piece.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not for everyone. That's the other thing, you know, because, you know, sometimes I used to run beginners courses, and then I would say at the end, so if I've totally put you off yoga, you can always try Pilates now. But there are people who will just serially try things out and never commit to one thing. So I always have a kind of bet with myself with you, and say I have a group of 12 people who will continue and who will just disappear. And I often lose that bet, hands down, because, you know, some people that I just don't expect will keep going with it. And people that I think, wow, they've really got into this, just disappears into the ether.
Yeah, it's like the universe, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
I never take offense, though.
Yes. Speaking of the universe, Francis, titular question of the show, why is there something rather than nothing?
Well, that is a good question. I've always believed there's something. You know, whether it's, you know, what is it, Deepak Chopra calls it the unified field, or, you know, the universal matrix. I don't know. I study astrology as well. So you can look at your chart, and, you know, I've got a twin sister, so you can play out that chart in various ways. So, you know, as an astrologer, you're not predicting. But, you know, if you see how a chart unfolds with someone, and, you know, there is a something, definitely. But what is it? Hope, is it? Sometimes I don't know. Is it positivity? Is it the fact that I've got, those of you that are into astrology, Jupiter conjunct the sun, which is, you know, really expansive. And, you know, a lot of people then say to me that I don't have any fear. I do, actually, but I'm very courageous with it. You know, I take lots of risks, more probably now than when I was younger. But yeah, there is something, definitely. And I was talking to my daughter the other day, we talk about reincarnation. I heard that word when I was 5, and then I knew exactly what it meant. But my daughter doesn't believe in reincarnation, so she says she's 16. And she said, in any way, and I thought it's a good point, even if I have been reincarnated, I can't remember that past life anyway, so so it's just here and now. Whereas I don't think it is just here and now. I think we are a product of our ancestry, you know, or, you know, when it's that thing where you meet someone and you just know them, you've met them in another life or whatever. So I am I disturb the rest of the band with my they're all very Newtonian in their thinking.
I really appreciate your comments there. And it's like the question itself, you know, it's just around like creativity and feeling and sensation. So,
well, that spark has to come from somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think like in creativity, you know, going back to that question, it was the one I like to kick around of like, you know, where, like, when do the ideas come out, or should they come out of chaos, or is everybody different? Peace, chaos, mm-hmm. or does it matter what you're creating? I mean, if you think of like music and rock music, it's always like, it feels like, I'm getting it out. Like, here it is right at you. Francis, I wanted to ask you to, let the listeners know, as far as like, I don't know whether it's connecting to your yoga practice or things that you say about yoga, or like how folks can connect to you, or where to find like resources that you'd like to share. This is totally your space.
Okay. Well, my website is the yogaextension.com. So there you'll find all the class schedules, and obviously, because just about everything is on Zoom, depending on the time difference, there might be a class that you want to do. That would be brilliant. That's got my contact email on there. And we have a Facebook page where we pop up you know, different things about yoga, photographs of us trying to persuade people to do yoga. You know, when you, I hate to say, you know, it is a business as well, you know, so we need bums on mats really to make it viable.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult one. I'm rubbish at marketing, and I hate, what I've noticed is there are some people, or there's some yoga teachers that are not great teachers, but they're very, very good at marketing. And there are some very good teachers, and you have to go and find them, actually. But yeah. There's some amazing teachers out there. And if you fancy the Iyengar system, then, you know, we're very meticulous about how we approach the subject. And, you know, as a beginner, it is building blocks, and we have great fun. Every class is different. Every muscle is used because of that. And it's an intellectual pursuit as well. And I don't that mean to say, you know, you're using your intelligence, your body intelligence. So it's interesting. It's not just moves. It's not just, but you can make it like that. You can just, you know, it's like a, like I tell a story when I teach a class. You know, a story through the poses.
It's really powerful, because I can say for myself that, at least as far as how I have developed as a human, and I don't know if it's like, sometimes feels like American male, like I'm 48 now, of a particular generation, and it's just, what I found is I get so caught up in my head over time. My life has been integrating my body into my experience, because it has, and so yoga has helped me integrate those things, and I've just become more, like you said, intelligent. Mm-hmm. Like I can, like never in my life, like if something was really impacting me, like that was really negative, I'm caught up in my head, I wouldn't know how to express it. I didn't know what I was feeling. I had trouble articulating. Now it's not perfect, mm-hmm. but like right now I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know what? I'm really upset at this moment. I can feel it, and I think this is what I'm responding to. Francis, I never did that for like the first 45 years of my life. And it's like now where it's like, I'm not perfect right now. This is how I'm feeling, and here's what's going on. And long journey for me.
But I think this is absolutely crucial, because it's mind and body. But, you know, I see people, they're just walking heads. That's it. You know, there's a disconnect from here downwards.
Yeah.
And it's usually the super, you know, ones that are all about the intelligence, you know, all about academic intelligence. And I always say to them, but there are seven or probably more intelligences, and having this ability to connect with your body is massive, actually. You know, but it's making, and you know, all the neural passages and the nadis that are connecting the body, it's absolutely visceral. And I think some people can come to yoga and never forget that, because they're walking heads. So if you can just get some kind of line in, then, you know, you're doing something good. But it can, for some people, it just never happens, unfortunately. And for some, you can see it. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah, you said you've physically seen it. Mm-hmm. I think, and the point that I mentioned for myself particularly, I know at least culturally here, yoga is a feminine exercise. Like, you know, it's very much. And men, I needed it. And the way I was brought up, I deeply needed it. And I think there's an aspect where...
Well, you can help me answer my question, because Andrew, my partner, he teaches as well. Yeah. And he said he thinks he should teach a men-only class. What do you think about that?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. I think the main merit, because I think the answer is like, you shouldn't have to. But I think the real answer in practical terms is, if men... It's a troubling time to talk about men needed space, but let's say men need space in a yoga community. That's men that they can feel like, oh, I'm going to do this weird thing, but I'm doing like a man type of thing. If that can get you, you know, there, I think that's really, really powerful, even though it sounds strange to talk about. I mean, like, right
I know
now.
I can't decide if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I do know a lot of men are scared to come into a class because it's too many women. And I can understand that as well. And
well, what about Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but what about, like, if I'm, this isn't my hang up, but what if I'm like a man and now I'm going to look super like clumsy, mm-hmm. like, you know, mm-hmm. if like I want to, like, say I'm a businessman, but mm-hmm. I've decided like I'm really like struggling. I've tried this yoga thing a couple mm-hmm. times and then I go there. Now I'm going there. And like when I first started doing yoga, I'm like, holy shit, I have no balance at all. Like mm-hmm. I have zero balance. Like mm-hmm. I thought. Because in my head at 12, I could balance. I thought I could balance mm-hmm. years later. So it's like maybe even the sense of like, I don't care what I look like in yoga, but I've been doing yoga for a long time. But I know when I first went in, I didn't want to look like, nobody wants to look like an idiot, mm-hmm. you know, or, mm-hmm. or fall over or yeah. injure themselves. So mm-hmm. I think there might be that kind of component mm-hmm. too. I see more younger males interested in yoga, but you know, I mean, if you look at every class that I go to, and it's every one for the last 3 or 4 years in different locations is 90% male. It's just mm-hmm. something to notice. Mm-hmm. Or in other genders, too. I'm talking about traditional binary here. But mm-hmm. men, I think men can use yoga. And yeah, I mean, thinking about how, you know, it's accessible.
Yeah, I think it's just trying to find ways to help bridge that gap for people who maybe feel on the outside. And that's a world that I can't ever visit. And I think we try to be very inclusive, and you know, we have Andrew, he teaches, you know, there's male teachers, there's female teachers, but you know, we have an open door policy. It's, you know, any age, and this is the beauty of Iyengar yoga, actually. You could start it and sit at 70 and still feel the benefit and not feel stupid or clumsy or know, whatever, because we take great care of people in the class, because we're teaching the poses. It's not anything to do with us as such. It's, you know, our role is as a guide, really. And you know, when we see people come on so well, it's really thrilling. Actually, I have a student who started in the lockdown, so he was doing it online, but of course we teach a lot of classes. He was doing 2 classes a day. He was quite overweight. And honestly, he went to see his chiropractor, and his chiropractor was like, what have you been doing? I've never, you know, he'd lost half his body weight. Just the yoga was a catalyst to him, you know, looking at his diet and, you know, and then on it goes. And he feels confident coming into the studio. He's come to me for private lessons. And he's just really, then he started going to the gym. And he's got an injury.
Right? And you're like, yeah.
I know.
Right?
I said, listen, it's fine to go to the gym. I'm not a gym person, but, you know, whatever gives you that, as long as the body's moving. But I said, get your body intelligence into gear so that when you go to the gym, you can use what you've learned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And it's, yeah, and thank you, you know, for talking about your experience with this. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been a student of it, and not as well versed in maybe some of the doctrinal aspects. Very practical about it, and you know, it's a unique opportunity for me to talk to you about connections of creativity mm-hmm. and, you know, connected to where things come from. Francis, I want to tell you that it's actually been like a deep honor to be able to talk to you. And I really, you're like, for me, when I do these shows and I have guests, like a lot of times I'm kind of so interested in like your journey or where you are, or what you've done or how you've done it, that it always feels like a great benefit and a gift to me. And I just want to extend to you that I've deeply enjoyed chatting with you welcome. And meeting you. And I didn't meet you at the Doug Fir.
And I didn't meet you last tonight.
Who knows? Who knows? At the Doug Fir, maybe I would have said something outlandish or spoiled something, and you would have never done the podcast.
And I will sell things at the merch table afterwards.
You didn't have to tell me. No, I could have said something strange because of being flustered. But so we do meet.
I really like Portland, actually. It's a great city. It really is.
Portland's been important to me, and I talked on the show, freedom. And I'm not trying to oversell anything. It's a complicated place, like every place is complicated. Mm-hmm. But the ability to express yourself, the ability to move about with a higher level of freedom than other areas, I say amen to you. I love that.
Wow, I didn't know that, actually. That's brilliant.
Yeah, there's a lot of space, a lot of openness, a lot of creativity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's mocked of being too, you know, foofy and all that type of stuff. But what I'm saying is there are people and they're dressed up, and as far as gender acceptance, it's not perfect. It's a very, but what I'm saying is there is an acceptance or an ability to perform or to be yourself in that way.
That's all we can hope for, isn't it? We have to accept. Absolutely.
You know, just so, yeah. And I'm glad you enjoyed your time. And thank you for the show at the Doug. Thank you for coming out to the podcast.
You can obviously see I'm very busy on a Saturday night.
Come on, I've seen movies about Glasgow on Saturday nights. And they're intense movies. Thank you so much, Francis.
Well, good luck.
It's been
with
a pleasure
podcast.
To meet you.
And enjoy your yoga journey, because it's an amazing thing. I wish everyone practiced yoga. Maybe the world would be a better place, actually.
Yeah. Thank you, Francis. And whatever you do on your Saturday night in Glasgow, make sure you enjoy it.
Well, it's been a pleasure, so thank you.
Thanks, Francis.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.